Hi, this is Miguel Gulen. I'm here on the NEC conference 2008, somewhere in, where, I don't know where
we're
at.
Poster presentation.
In the poster presentations. And I'm here with Dr. Maria Kaler and Dr. Sherry Toledo. I guess we should mention your official affiliations, but you can do that in your introductions. Today is Tuesday, July 1st, and they're going to sort of share about blogging perspectives of blogging and higher ed. And but first, we'll just pass the recorder around and ask them to introduce themselves. So we'll start with the least experienced blogger first. Dr. Kaler.
Hi, Maria Kaler from the University of Texas at San Antonio, and I'm just getting ready to integrate blogging into my graduate classes in the fall semester.
And I'm Sherry Toledo from Illinois State, and I've been having my students blog for about the last 2 years.
Great, and we've just been joined by Nicholas Toledo. Hi, Nicholas. My name's Miguel.
Hello, my name is Nick Toledo, Nicolas.
Nice to meet you, Nicolas. I'm not sure if you do any blogging, but you probably have to put up with a blogger in your household. So tell us about that.
Well, per se, I don't blog myself, but I live with someone who's a repeat blogger, I would say.
Repeat offender, yeah.
Yeah, confirmed blogger. And it's very, it connects people. And it gets information out there, and you get information. It's a two-way information highway, so...
Well, great. I appreciate you sharing your perspective. We're sort of asking. So, Dr. Kaler, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're thinking about for your blogging with your students in the fall? And are there any challenges or any questions that you have in your mind about this?
Yes, I've been wanting to do this for a while, and one of the reasons is I haven't really been satisfied with some of the course management systems that we've used. They make it really tedious, and it's not easy for the students to access all sorts of information. So what I thought I would do is create a system of blogs, an individual blog for each of the students in my legal issues class, which is legal issues in special education, which is the first time I'll be teaching it. It's a new course. It's a graduate course. And what I'm hoping to do is have students write different perspectives. We're going to present different cases that perhaps haven't been solved in the courtroom or through mediation, and have students blog about what they feel based on the law the outcome of those cases should be, and that way they can share all of the information, and of course we can continue to follow those cases and see what the actual outcome is. But it'll give us an avenue for putting new ideas out there, and something that, you know, the way I hope to set up the blog, something that students can access very easily, access each other's blogs, they can look at different kinds of postings. I'm also hoping to integrate maybe Twitter or something in as a, I always have short classroom announcements I want to make or remind students of assignments. And instead of sending out email because they don't always have access, I'm thinking about using Twitter also to have it sent to their cell phones or wherever, where we can, you know, reminder, this is due today. Don't forget to bring this to class, those kinds of things. So those are two things I'm thinking about using in that one class in the fall. I'm really excited.
Wow. Sherry, do you, now you're a veteran user of blogs in your classes. Could you share some of your insights and perhaps any advice that you might want to give Dr. Kaler as she starts out on this adventure?
Well, first of all, I use blogs with undergraduates, master's level, and doctoral level students. Undergraduates and the master's level, my purpose was to help them establish a personal learning network and to really get connected with other teachers, not just necessarily educational technologists. So what I did was use 21 Classes, which is a portal, and then everybody has a blog within that portal. And the best thing you can do is give them the most specific directions and whatever you want. I give them directions and a sample posting. Because what I have them do, I give them a list of possible bloggers. I tell them they need to go out, find a blogger's post that sparks their interest, compose a response, post it on the blogger's response, and Miguel, I know they posted some on yours, and then wait and see if that person responds to them. And then they also need to copy that part of the original post from the blogger and put it in their blog in 21 Classes and put their response in so that I can track it. And they do a specific link where they got it. So my purpose is really a little bit different. With my doctoral students, we start out with that, and then they start blogging about personal approaches as they learn more about educational technology.
One of the challenges, I think, as an education blogger just sort of out there is that I have, I know I have university students hit my blog and they'll leave a comment or they'll all go to a second grade lesson plan. And one of the questions that sort of pops into my head because I'm aware of my audience is, what would be some of the interest, what are some blog entries that you would want your students to read at the blog, on the blogs that are out there? I'm just sort of curious about that. Obviously, you can read the research and everything that's out there and do some analysis, but what kind of things are you looking for that might be out there? Sherry?
Well, I with my undergraduates, their biggest issue is that they go into their student teaching and teaching not having any idea what it's really like. So I want them finding teachers talking about, oh, today I had these kids that you wouldn't believe it. Today is the day I didn't want to be a teacher. So I want them getting exposed to the realities of teaching. With the graduate students, I want them being exposed to the latest and the greatest, how things are being used, why they're being used, why they're not being used. So just an overall understanding of what's going on in educational technology.
Maria, what's your perspective? What kind of writing would you want your students to blog about or experience in their writing?
I think one of the things that we see a lot is that students write either very detailed synopsis of step-by-step of what happened or this is it, you know, as it appeared. And one of the things I really think that they need to prove on both undergraduate and graduate is coming up with their own original ideas and being able to pose questions or thoughts that get other people thinking that are intriguing and make, you know, like you were saying, that something that sparks interest or sparks thoughts. That's what I want them to be able to post. And it's not something that we see a lot. You see a lot of, oh, I'm just going to present you with information that I discovered. And that's really what I want to get away from. I really want it to be evident in their posts that they have thought this out and that there's no answer. We're not looking for a solution. They're not presenting just information. They're presenting ideas that lead to additional thinking by others and by themselves.
I don't know if either one of you had a chance to listen to Dr. Conrad Glogowski yesterday. I did get a chance to podcast him yesterday, and someone actually, Will Richardson actually streamed his whole presentation. So it is available online. But it's really exciting because he's talking about using blogging with his students, and he talks about the transition he made. It took him a year to get away from the kind of writing that, you know, the writing feedback that we're accustomed to providing as teachers, and getting into more of a conversation with students and how other students build that online community. What examples of online community would you be looking for in higher ed? How do you build community? Because he said, well, that's one of the important things is don't just turn people loose on a blog and say, go write. How do you build that community throughout everything?
With my online classes, I build community within the course management system that I use. And actually, next semester, I'm using a wiki for all my classes. So I'm moving away from course management system also. And I think what happens, especially as I am morphing my use of blogs, is that they start commenting on one another. And they do. It's pretty fun to watch their growth from the first time they post, and it is just, well, thank you for that, and I can see how that's useful, and I'm going to use this, to where, you know, two or three or four posts down the road, they're really starting to interact with the material, and it is becoming, or with the educator whose blog they're posting on, and it's becoming a conversation. So they start reading each other's blogs because I have them in 21 classes, and they start commenting on one another's blogs. So I think that really builds a lot of community.
Maria?
I think that I'm going to have to go through that process since I'm just starting, because I think it's kind of like being in a public school classroom. You can't just put kids in a group and tell them they're going to work as a group. You have to teach and model how that's to happen. So I think creating that kind of learning communities is going to take the same kind of work at the graduate level and even at the undergraduate level, which I hope to expand to eventually. But, you know, I think, Miguel, you made a point a minute ago that it's going to be difficult, I think, for some students to start seeing, you know, me as their professor just saying, well, that's a good idea, or, hey, you just taught me something. Because I think a lot of time even graduate students come to you and say, well, you have the knowledge, and I'm going to work in here, and I'm going to learn from you. And we don't oftentimes sometimes reciprocate that and say, hey, you know, I'm going to learn from you also. So building that within that learning community is a difficult, I think, step that's going to occur slowly, at least for me and for my students. And the thing I'm interested in and excited about in the fall is the students that I have in this class, most of them I've had in one class before, and I will continue to have, so we can really build. That's why I selected that particular class.
Sherry, do you have any other comments?
The last thing is that you're right. I do try to go in and post a response to their blogs and that, and say, I had never thought of that. That's a great. So building that reciprocal relationship. What did David Thornburg call it today? It wasn't gravity bound. It was a symmetrical relationship. So I think that's very important.
Nicolas, you've been listening to these two professors sort of share about writing and blogging at higher ed. What's your perspective just listening to what they've had to say? Sort of catching you off guard here, but...
Well, I think that blogging has its place. I wish, and I plan on instituting and adopting blogging into my courses. But right now, with the course management system and the administration that I'm working with, it's everything's standardized. And I'm sorry to say that I'm standardized because of that situation. But it's in my teaching plan to integrate blogs and wikis and get away from the course management system that we're using on campus, which is Blackboard, which is very limiting. And I've seen other course management systems that are open that you can design to what you need.
All of you, I'm sure, have probably encountered the standardization, that desire to standardize on certain tools to the exclusion of everything else, and almost locking you into particular sets of tools that may not fit your needs as educators. And I think classroom teachers also in K-12 find this, that they want to use the tools that match their teaching style and match the learning needs of their students, but sometimes they encounter resistance from central office or the administration. What is your perspective on bringing these kinds of tools, blogs and wikis, that are essentially disruptive? They take away the power from the that central authority and put it back in your hands as educators and back in the hands of your students. So, Nicholas, so you mentioned it, you have a feeling that you're standardized, and you know, that's true. A lot of people are fall into that. So what's your perspective on this? And I have to pick up on the fact that you said blogging has its place. It's almost like part of that is like blogging has its place, and we use it when it's appropriate, but we don't use it over here when it's not appropriate. And some would argue that communication tools go across the whole thing. So I just want to get an insight into that. I'm not challenging your perspective. I just want to get a little bit more of your thinking on that, or just your off the cuff reflection, because that's what really this is.
Okay. Well, blogging, from what I've seen, it's a very exclusive club almost. I mean, you have to be almost invited and accepted into whatever blogging forum you're in, and it takes some getting used to. And that's where I am, because I do not blog. I might lurk once in a while into blogs, but I'm not there yet.
Maria, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, I know that at your institution you also face those kinds of challenges. I've heard it from other folks that have been at your campus. So how do you overcome all that?
Well, I think that right now it's just a matter of taking the responsibility of bringing that there, because just as in any other situation, the people that maybe make those kinds of decisions just aren't familiar with it. They have so many other responsibilities that sometimes they need us to bring that and say, hey, this is what we want to do. I think that there's, you know, reception, you know, to these kinds of ideas now, or in the past maybe it has been, well, I'm not so sure about that. But I think now that it's becoming much more popular out in the community and in the culture, that people are wanting to see this. So, you know, we're kind of seeing a shift, a slow shift. We know in education we're usually a little bit behind, but I think that that's one thing that we have to keep in mind. When you're saying taking that power away from that central figure, I think, you know, you're looking a little bit at the, I have to throw in the theory here, but a little bit of the, you know, constructivist view of kids creating their own learning. And if you look, if you take the big picture of where we are, not just in our country, but as a global community, that is where we are. And we're really not, I mean, we see ourselves as the pioneers, but we're not the pioneers in the global community. We're the pioneers in the educational environment, which is behind. And so we always have to remember that, because what we're doing is fantastic. But when you look around and you get online, you see that kids and students and people in other countries are already doing these things. So I think it's about time.
Sherry, what would you, any final comments?
I'm starting to see changes with my colleagues at Illinois State, the College of Education. We graduate around 3,000 teachers a year, and that comes out of my department, basically, curriculum and instruction. So we have the largest faculty. I ran a program for about 2.5 years that started about 4 years ago, and we didn't make much of an impact. And what's happened is, as I've done some of these things with my classes, and those students have gone into other people's classes, they've started saying, well, why aren't we doing wikis? Why aren't we doing blogs? Or they get a grad assistant that had my ed tech class. This just happened. She got them into PB Wiki, and they're just going nuts, these two instructors. And so I think it's going to be a bottom up, at least on our level, that the more people I can reach, the better. And I'm kind of, there's two more of us now, so there's three of us that are teaching classes using the Web 2.0 tools. So I think it's going to expand that way, but it didn't expand the way I wanted it to or when I wanted it to. So I think that's more common.
I'd like to thank all three of you for sharing your thoughts and ideas just off the cuff here at NEC 2008. I think this is really what around the corner kind of connections are about. Just walk around the corner at NEC and you run into somebody that's going to sort of blow your mind, and I really appreciate y'all doing that for me. So thank you so much. Just one last thing, share how we can get a hold of you if we need to. Your email address would be wonderful. And if you wouldn't mind making this blanket statement, I give permission to podcast this recording. Nicolas, you just say, just let Sherry do it for both of you, because that, you know, well, you and I both know who runs the...
Right.
I give permission for you to use this anywhere you want. And you can get a hold of me through my Gmail account. It's drctedd@gmail.com.
I'm glad I asked. I would have known that one.
Okay, you have my permission to podcast this, and my email address is ntoledo55@yahoo.com.
And you can reach me at mariakaylor@utsa.edu, mariakaylor@utsa.edu, and I give permission for you to use this.
Great. Thanks. I appreciate it again.